Welcome to Mothers in Popular Culture, a podcast looking at the ways we can relate to science fiction, fantasy, and literary mothers of all kinds. I'm looking at these fictional moms through my lens as a mom who works full-time with one young child, but loves to nerd out over motherhood. I'm not a doctor or psychiatrist. These are just my own thoughts and opinions. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to episode 4. Today we are going to discuss sitcom moms. We're going to rewind television history to see what sitcoms reveal about real life. I'm Renee, and as always, I'm joined by my feathered co-host, Sage. Today we're talking about, like I said, sitcom moms from the polished homemakers of the post-war years to the fierce, flawed, and often funny mothers of today. The apron-clad matrons of the 1950s to the overworked, underappreciated, deeply human moms of the 2020s. We'll track how they've changed decade by decade and ask what they reflect about women's lives in politics, in the workplace, and in the economy. What can they teach us about motherhood, gender roles, labor, class, and political power in real life? Spoiler, sitcoms have rarely told the whole truth. But the lies they tell are revealing too. So let's jump back to the very beginning, to the 1950s. The idealized housewife. The first family sitcoms aired just as the Cold War began. The Aldrich Family in 1949 was soon followed by The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, Father Knows Best, and Leave It to Beaver. In these shows, the mother wasn't just domestic, she was the home. Margaret Anderson and June Cleaver were poised, unflappable, and emotionally generous, rarely angry, and they never looked a mess. The earliest TV moms, like June Cleaver, served roast beef in pearls and vacuum cleaned like it was a spiritual calling. TV sold a fantasy of motherhood so idealized it barely touched the floor. Off screen, though, real mothers, especially working class and black women, were working low-paid jobs to survive. And let's not forget, most women couldn't even get a credit card in their own name back then. So why this false image? The 1950s were a time of containment, geopolitically, culturally, and domestically. The ideal housewife stood in contrast to the Rosie the Riveter of World War II. Women had proven they could run factories and shipyards, but the post-war economy needed them back in the kitchen. Suburbia expanded, consumer goods flooded the market, and television stepped in to sell an image of domestic tranquility. Behind the scenes, many women weren't buying it. Black women, immigrant women, and poor white women continued to work in low-paid jobs, often as domestic labor for middle-class families, but you'd never see them on Father Knows Best. These sitcoms made it seem like being a wife and mother came with a house, a husband, and a dishwasher. Real life didn't come with a laugh track. Legally, women still had limited financial independence. Most banks refused women credit cards without a husband's signature. Even women who worked full-time could be denied loans or mortgages based on their gender alone. These mothers were the emotional and logistical center of the household on TV only. But until the Equal Credit Opportunity Act in 1974, most banks could legally deny credit to women unless they had a male cosigner, In the 1950s, a woman could manage the family budget, but not open a department store account in her own name. The 1950s sitcom mom wasn't just a character. She was a cultural blueprint for post-war domesticity, a model of what the nation wanted women to be. Politically, their power was symbolic more than real. While women held the vote since 1920, few held elected office. Very few. The first woman to serve in the Senate, Rebecca Felton, was appointed and served only one day. The first woman, she didn't serve very long, and that really, I guess it seems to set the pace for women in politics, sadly. By the 1950s, progress was glacial. On screen, sitcom mothers upheld the fantasy that none of this was a problem. 1960s. Cracks in the apron. So in the 1960s, society began to shift slowly but surely. TV dragged its heels, though. We got the Donna Reed Show, Hazel, My Three Sons. And once again, moms were cheerful, respectable, and white, and raised well-behaved children. But outside the screen, change was coming fast. As the civil rights movement, second wave feminism, and countercultural politics emerged in the 1960s, the sitcom mom stayed oddly static. In 1963, Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, gave language to a widespread dissatisfaction among middle-class housewives. That year, the Equal Pay Act was passed, on paper at least, guaranteeing women equal wages for equal work. But these changes barely rippled into the sitcoms until Bewitched, which first premiered in 1964 and introduced something different. Samantha, the nose-twitching witch, was powerful, but told to suppress her abilities to be a, quote, normal wife. The show became an accidental feminist parable, a woman forced to downplay her strengths to preserve her husband's ego. Her twitching nose then became a metaphor for repressed feminine agency. I loved that show. So then came Julia in 1968. Diane Carroll played a widowed black nurse and single mother. Smart, stylish, middle class. It was groundbreaking. The first network show to star a black woman in a non-stereotypical role. But critics, especially black viewers and writers, noted the show's detachment from reality. Julia never faced racism or economic struggle. It was representation without confrontation. Thank you, Sage. I'm glad you like that. No references to racism. No mentions of poverty. It was a sanitized version of black motherhood crafted for white audiences. I agree, Sage. Unfair. Meanwhile, women in the real world were fighting for equal pay and organizing for reproductive rights. TV mostly looked away. So in 1963, the Equal Pay Act was signed. The National Organization for Women was founded in 1966, and Shirley Chisholm became the first black woman elected to Congress in 1968. Sitcom moms didn't mention politics, but the women watching those sitcoms were living it. Sitcom moms were still stuck in a 1950s bubble while women in America were marching in the streets. In the 1970s, enter feminism loudly. The 1970s let feminism through the front door. The 70s gave us two tracks, the aspirational sitcom fantasy and the feminist sitcom reality. And finally, TV moms were allowed to speak up. Maud, which ran from 1972 to 1978, and starring Bea Arthur, which you might recognize her from The Golden Girls. I was a huge fan. Well, Maud was liberal, menopausal, sharp-tongued, and political. She argued with her husband, supported civil rights, and in one unforgettable two-part episode, got an abortion. The episode aired a year before Roe v. Wade and sparked boycotts and congressional backlash. Maud's daughter, Carol, was a single mother and a vocal feminist. This wasn't just mom as nurturer. This was mom as political actor. So this Maud was really an incredible leap forward. Check it out. And then there was One Day at a Time from 1975. Bonnie Franklin's Anne Romano was a divorced mom of two daughters, navigating work, dating, parenting, and sexism. She did not smile through everything. She got angry. She got tired. And she called men out on their nonsense. All of these shows mirrored seismic shifts. For example, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act finally passed in 1974, allowing women to get credit cards and loans without a male cosigner. Imagine. The number of women in the workforce was continuing to climb in the 1970s, and Roe v. Wade in 1973 affirmed a constitutional right to abortion. At least, I guess, as of this year, temporarily. Right? Women were joining the workforce in record numbers, and the number of single mothers was rising. But not all shows leaned progressive. Most TV shows still focused on the nuclear family. The Brady Bunch, for example, which ran from 1969 to 1974, continued that fantasy with Carol Brady somehow raising six kids without ever seeming flustered or needing a job. The 1970s gave us a fork in the road. The feminist mother and the fairy tale mother. Both coexisted in reruns and ratings. The 1980s. Mom has a job, but still makes dinner. By the 1980s, many sitcom moms had jobs, but they were still doing most of the parenting and housework. Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show was a lawyer and mother of five. Elise Keaton from Family Ties was an architect. These women were sharp, composed, and always available. But these moms represented aspiration and not reality. Women now made up a major chunk of the workforce, but childcare, wage gaps, and household labor were still unequally shared. The, quote, second shift, a term coined by sociologist Arlie Hochschild in 1989, described how working mothers came home to unpaid labor, dinner, homework, emotional management. These women were brilliant, beautiful, and somehow always available for a family dinner. But It just didn't reflect reality. Sitcoms didn't show all of that. But one did. And that show was Roseanne. Premiering in 1988, Roseanne centered on a working class family in Illinois. Roseanne Connor wasn't always likable. She was tired, sarcastic, and often broke. The show tackled job loss, healthcare, fat phobia, and parental burnout. Roseanne broke the mold. She got mad, she worked, she parented, and she didn't pretend it was easy. She even told her kids, "Your father's not a saint. He's just the guy who didn't leave." I can't do Roseanne's voice. Roseanne was a revolution, though, in realism. It was a sharp contrast to the gentle, dad-centered chaos of Full House or Growing Pains, where moms were often absent or conveniently dead. Politically, women were pushing for more, such as in 1981, Sandra Day O'Connor became the first woman on the Supreme Court. Geraldine Ferraro became the first female vice presidential nominee of a major party in 1984. But in the Reagan era, social programs for poor families were slashed, and quote, welfare queen stereotypes were weaponized against single mothers, especially Black mothers. TV rarely engaged with that rhetoric. Roseanne came close, but most sitcom moms were still middle class, white, and living comfortably. You're right, Sage. It seems like TV had a long way to go still. Sitcoms mostly stayed silent on those battles, but Roseanne's Kitchen, that's where they usually, or occasionally at least, echoed. The 1990s. Reality creeps in. The 1990s brought more complicated mothers. Murphy Brown was a single, career-focused journalist who chose to have a baby alone. Her decision made real-world headlines when Vice President Dan Quayle claimed she undermined family values. Imagine a fictional pregnancy sparking a national debate. Fictional moms, it seems, could still cause real political panic. Another show, Grace Under Fire, created by Chuck Lorre and starring Rhett Butler, portrayed a divorced, recovering alcoholic raising three kids while working in a blue-collar job. Like Roseanne, it showed that not all moms had nice furniture or constantly patient smiles. The 90s also expanded the image of motherhood through sitcoms like Living Single, Sister Sister, and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, some of my favorite shows. While not always mom-centered, they included multi-generational households, surrogate mothers, and tough love matriarchs like Aunt Viv. These shows began to reflect different kinds of families. Mothers who were poor, Black, queer, or recovering from something. And, politically, women were on the rise. In 1992, the quote, Year of the Woman, a record number of women were elected to Congress, doubling the number in the Senate. The Family and Medical Leave Act, passed in 1993, granted unpaid leave for new parents. That's something. Welfare reform in 1996 under Bill Clinton imposed work requirements and time limits disproportionately affecting single moms, sadly. So, most sitcoms still centered white middle-class families, but TV was beginning to show cracks in the American dream. But it still mostly avoided poverty and systemic critique. But the cracks were now visible, and sometimes the moms talked back. 2000s. Moms with Bite. The early 2000s leaned into snark and self-awareness. Lois in Malcolm in the Middle yelled, punished, micromanaged, and was completely unapologetic. She became a fan favorite for being honest about motherhood's chaos. Gilmore Girls gave us Lorelai, a single mom who rejected her wealthy upbringing to raise her daughter in a quirky town. She talked fast, drank coffee like it was oxygen, and somehow paid rent in Stars Hollow with part-time innkeeping and charm. She talked fast, worked hard, and had complicated relationships with both class and control. She was witty, driven, and complicated, but still a bit of a class fantasy. Then there was Reba, featuring a divorced country mom raising three kids, including a teen daughter with a baby. Other shows like According to Jim, Still Standing, and The New Adventures of Old Christine gave us flawed, often resentful, but loving mothers navigating real frustrations. And especially shows like Reba and Old Christine showed moms who were messy, divorced, juggling too much, but they still mostly lived in safe suburbs. Structural problems like wage inequality or unaffordable health care or child care, still missing. These moms mostly had homes, jobs, and support systems within familiar suburban frameworks that insulated them from true precarity. Sitcoms rarely explored the structural barriers single moms or poor moms face with any sustained seriousness. Yeah. Still, in the 2000s, we have some way to go, right, Sage? Meanwhile, though, in the real world, this is the period when we see the rise of, quote, mommy wars in media. The mommy wars pitted mothers who chose to stay home to raise their children against those who chose to work outside the home, often implying that one choice was inherently better than the other. The debate overshadowed the real issues facing working families, such as lack of affordable childcare, inadequate parental leave, and flexible work options. This is also the time when we see some mothers being labeled as, quote, tiger moms or helicopter moms, while others were seen as lazy or permissive. Mothers couldn't and just can't win. They were criticized for breastfeeding or not, limiting screen time or not, putting their kids in early childhood education or not, and have been facing these criticisms ever since. And workplace sexism hadn't budged much since the 2000s, or really since the 1980s. One example includes the fact that the pay gap between women and men has mostly plateaued, with women making 76% of what men do for the same work in the 2000s versus now, when women earn only 85% of what men do for the same work. There's also what's called the, quote, maternity penalty, where women have faced discrimination due to their potential choice of becoming a mother while working. Sadly, this is apparent in the statistics. A study by the Third Way think tank reported that working mothers lose 4% of their earnings for every child they have. I think this was also borne out during the pandemic in 2020 and onward, where we saw it was really and mostly women who had to sacrifice their jobs when kids had to stay home from schools that were all closed, right? But women are showing that when they are given close to equal educational opportunities, they excel. women became the majority of college graduates by 2006. And Nancy Pelosi became the first female Speaker of the House in 2007. So there were some strides, right, that women were making in the early 2000s. But the 2008 financial crisis disproportionately impacted women, especially single mothers and women of color. TV rarely reflected the economic fallout. But behind the laughter, anxiety about instability began to seep in on TV. 2010s to today, resistance and representation. In the last decade, we've finally seen moms on TV who feel like people we know. Today, sitcom moms are more diverse, more political, and more complex. So what have sitcom moms shown us? Not always the truth, but always a dream. They reflect what society wants from mothers: stability, patience, endless giving. But real moms, they get mad, they fight. They show up tired and still love hard. Shows like Black-ish and Fresh Off the Boat gave us Rainbow Johnson and Jessica Wang, complex, funny, culturally specific portraits of modern motherhood. Black-ish gave us Rainbow Johnson, a biracial anesthesiologist and mother of five, juggling identity, racism, and parenting with nuance. Mom, created by Jack Lohr, focused on addiction, recovery, and intergenerational trauma, with a mother and daughter both in recovery, exploring the intergenerational weight of motherhood. The show Better Things, created by and starring Pamela Adlon, centered on a single mom raising three daughters in LA. She wasn't perfect. She was real, without romance, without a savior, and with plenty of emotional mess. The reboot of One Day at a Time gave us a Cuban-American veteran mother navigating PTSD, single parenting, and immigration politics. And even in ensemble shows like Superstore, motherhood was part of the fabric. Amy, played by America Ferrera, worked retail while raising a child and eventually becoming a single mom. Her story showed what it means to be essential but undervalued. In Superstore, motherhood isn't the punchline. It's a source of both strength and struggle. Politically, in 2018, more women ran for office than ever before. In 2021, Kamala Harris became the first female vice president. The pandemic exposed just how fragile, though, the support systems for mothers were. The, quote, she session, like recession, but she session, entered the lexicon as millions of women left the workforce due to childcare loss. And like I mentioned before, the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, pushed millions of women out of the workforce, exposing the brittleness of our care systems. So sitcoms have started catching up, reflecting motherhood as political, emotional, and collective labor. Sitcoms at last started reflecting some of this. Not all, not equally, but the conversations were happening. From June Cleaver's Pearls to Rainbow Johnson's Surgeon Scrubs, sitcom mothers have changed with the times, but never told the whole story. They've mirrored what society wanted from women, but not always what women needed. And even now, the most underrepresented moms on TV are often those with the least privilege in real life. Single moms, poor moms, disabled moms, immigrant moms, queer moms, trans moms, moms who don't speak English. Sitcoms are catching up, but not all the way. We're still telling a narrow story. Where are the poor moms, the queer moms, trans moms, disabled moms, immigrant moms? Where are they? The sitcom mom remains a question. What kind of motherhood does our culture think is funny? And whom does it leave behind? And the sitcom mom is a cultural mirror. Sometimes it's a warped mirror, and sometimes it's just funhouse glass. What have sitcom moms taught us? That TV reflects the world we wish for more than the world we live in. That motherhood is powerful and political. And that sometimes the most radical thing a sitcom mom can do is say she's tired. That's right, Sage. Thanks for joining me today. If you like this episode, subscribe and share. And let us know which sitcom mom stuck with you. We'll see you next time. Same couch, same chaos. Thank you so much for listening. The music today was by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech, licensed under Creative Commons. Tune in next time for more Mothers in Pop Culture.